Okay.
Let's get going.
Let's do it.
Let's go, man. Let's do it. Murder Mystery 2.
What's the intro thing I say? I had a new one that I like better, but I forget now. Oh, shit.
Oh.
God, this is not good for us working on a... Okay.
Just speak from the heart.
Friends and family all across the globe, welcome back to the fourth Adam Sandler podcast.
That's right, folks. We're back. We took a little bit of a break, and now we're back with all the analysis and summary and jokes about an Adam Sandler movie that you've been waiting for. This movie's been out for months now, and I know you watched it, and you were like, I know they're going to get a podcast out real quick.
And, I will, in our defense, I think this is the shortest gap between the release of a film and our
our
podcast.
The longest one was almost a decade. Yeah. Probably over
I guess
a decade.
It's not meaningful.
Maybe 2 decades.
This is actually like our litmus now. This is the bar that we have to jump.
Okay, yeah. We'll try to jump this bar even better.
I think we'll
next time.
Jump it even better than this time. But this time we're talking about Murder Mystery 2. And I know you said that, well, I guess we didn't talk about it. Did you want to introduce this one for us?
Oh, God. All right. Yes, I did. All right. Let me just refresh something. Who is in this movie? Nick and Audrey. All right. So in Murder Mystery 2, a sequel to 2019.
Thanks. Sorry, I left you hanging there.
Murder Mystery 2 is a sequel to 2019's straight to Netflix surprise hit Murder Mystery. Adam Sandler and Jennifer Aniston return as Nick and Audrey, a couple who at this point are now working as professional private detectives. And in this movie, they are going to solve a little mystery for us.
I'll take over from there and not and that was really
like that?
Really good. It made me want to watch it. So I guess one of the characters from Murder Mystery 1, the Maharaja, is back in this one, and he's getting married. And so basically what's been happening is in the intervening years, Nick and Audrey's career as detectives has taken off, and it's basically been a big flop after flop, as they try to be detectives and don't do a great job. But they feel like this opportunity what they decide is they need a vacation. They need to give up the detective work and just relax a little bit. And so they find out that the Maharaj is getting married. He invites them to his wedding, and it's the perfect opportunity. What could possibly go wrong, right? And ends up nothing goes wrong, and they have a great, great trip and reunite and like really reconnect with each other, meet some friends along the way, have a couple adventures here and there, and then head back home feeling rejuvenated and ready to get back to work.
Psych, there's a mystery. Someone is murdered.
Two.
It's the bodyguard. And also someone is kidnapped.
Maharaja.
It's...
Wait. Oh. Yeah.
The man
the
himself.
Guy getting married.
Wait, is it? Yeah. He's the Maharaja.
Yep. And we are...
Yeah, he's kidnapped.
He's totally kidnapped.
Oh, yeah. And so, okay. So then they're like, well, we'll just, we'll solve this mystery. We're detectives. I think part of it too is they're trying to pass a test, a detective test, and they're reading a book and studying. And that's by the famous, really important, successful detective, who is played by Mark Strong.
Detective Miller.
And so anyway, they're going to try and solve this mystery, but then guess what? Detective Miller shows up, and now he's going to solve the mystery. So now we have two detectives working together, or are they rivals?
Yeah.
They're kind of rivals. And I think that our friends, Adam Sandler and Jennifer Aniston, also known as Nick and Audrey. I want to say Nick and Nora, which I guess that would have been too obvious. Yeah, but a little Thin Man reference, a little classic cinema reference for you.
Nick and Nora's Infinite Playlist?
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Okay, that's all I know.
One of the classic detective films from the 1930s.
I love how it's
Nick
really
and Nora's
noir.
Infinite Playlist.
It's really
their infinite phonograph.
Man, it's so gritty.
So anyway, they're feeling a little insecure, I think, is how I read their character, with this tough guy detective walking around.
Totally. I mean, one of the things I think you notice immediately in watching it is that we're really dealing with the exact same plot as before. Like it's the same frame or the same kind of setup as before, right? Like,
yes,
we're trapped in this place. We've got a set number of suspects. They're all really close to the main character. There was even like an Orient Express thing at the beginning of the movie, and I was like, oh, is this going to take place on a train? Like, very quickly passed, but it ended up not, obviously. But it's very much one of those, like, we're contained in this space, somebody did it, you know, Clue, all these kind of things. But then the wrench in both of them is a detective comes in and says, I'm the one who's going to solve this case. In the first one, I seem to remember the guy blowing a lot of smoke rings. Is that?
Yeah, LaCroix.
Yeah, LaCroix.
The French detective LaCroix.
Yeah.
And this guy, I liked him. He felt like a classic character in some way. He was French. That's probably why.
Well, he had
he was
a personality.
Inspector.
He wasn't
Inspector
just like
LaCroix.
I'm Detective Connor Miller, and I'm gonna solve this case, and I have no personality.
Right. So he was kind of quirky, LaCroix. But Connor Miller is he's like, I don't know. I think he shows up. He's like scuba. He scuba dived to the island.
Like Navy SEAL team.
Right. Yeah. Navy SWAT, SEAL shit. Yeah. They're coming
Ghost
out.
Ghost Recon.
Yeah. So Rainbow he comes out Six. And is. Fucking Rainbow Six scuba diving gear, and he's just like, recon, and he's like talking into walkie talkies probably, and
Delta Foxtrot, just, Delta
yeah,
Tango,
right, yeah
Alpha.
So he's got all that military kind of SWAT team, Rainbow Six, Navy SEAL, Call of Duty
Halo
type of shit going on.
Halo Reach.
Oh my god. Anyway, he's tough. He's a man's man.
Yeah, which is weird that I didn't like him, because I usually, that's like me all over. I'm like,
usually when you see those characters, you're like, oh my god, how can I emulate? What does this guy eat for breakfast?
Well, I just feel like I can relate to those characters when I'm watching like Adam Sandler and he's bumbling around. I'm like, dude, freaking, like, what's something like a lot of guys like me would say would be like, freaking, nut up, dude. You know, and I would just toss him a beer.
Justin is always telling me to nut up. It's really annoying and inappropriate.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Usually he texts it to me out of the blue. He's just like, nut up. I'm like, what are you talking about?
I really want
to go to the zoo.
You gotta
nut up. What does
Do
that
not
mean?
Let that gorilla make you look like a fool.
So right there, I mean, we can get into it, but I think right there, that's one of the tells for me. Like, we suddenly, like, I'm going to keep comparing this to the first one because it's a sequel. But I kind of liked the first one, and I liked the, I mean, it was sloppy. It's most of the Adam Sandler movies are kind of sloppy.
Yeah.
Even when sometimes they do things that you're just like, oh, it was sloppily done, but it seemed like it hit some kind of tone or note that is enjoyable. And the first one did that with whodunits, and they're in such a classic and silly setup. And this one, right away, we've moved away from any kind of like quirky armchair mystery.
Yeah.
To like, who's this guy? He's like an action guy. He's Delta Fox 6.
Yeah. oh, it's taking itself a little more seriously than it did before, and I don't particularly like that.
It's just like parodying something else, or is it a parody? I don't know. They ran out. They watched one Agatha Christie movie.
I thought you were going to say
they didn't watch a second one.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say this was a tell that he was going to be somehow like involved in it, just because he's like he doesn't have enough personality to be anything other than an antagonist or something. Which
that's what you might think.
I didn't think that, but I do agree with the other point, the point you actually did make, which is like it did immediately feel like, oh, this is a different kind of movie. And I feel like they tried to like salvage that by saying, oh, and by the way, we're like going really quickly away from where we just were to France, to Paris, France. And now we're going to like wander. And I thought that was, sure, that's fun. Go to Paris, France. That seems like a cool thing to do in the movie. But it didn't really salvage it for me.
No, it didn't do anything.
I'm glad you said that.
Almost nothing. I think the one thing that I took away from it was I feel like they were kind of parodying action movies, and there were more action set pieces, and they were more direct. And they did something that I don't know how much we want to get into what stuff that happens towards the end, but like I feel like there was a little Die Hard moment where someone's like sneaking around in the rafters or something like that.
Yeah.
I thought maybe, is this an homage to Die Hard? Not a mystery. I'm sorry that bothers me, but I want your parody, like if you're going to do an aesthetic parody, I want it to be a consistent aesthetic parody, not a bunch of mush. But
wait, is this an Easter egg for Toy Story? Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
That's okay. No, I think that's
fair. But they also did a pet peeve of mine, which is I can enjoy a good action movie where the guy is an action hero who knows how to fight.
Mm-hmm.
It always kind of annoys me in movies where someone who is mostly a regular Joe knows how to fight all of a sudden, and it's almost solely because like I don't know how else is he gonna get through a room full of goons. I don't know. Maybe he has to hide in a cake. Did you ever think about that?
Yeah.
There's probably a ton of things he could do. Maybe he has to hide in like one of those trays with the cloth on it.
Yeah.
There's a lot of things he could hide in.
Like a couch.
He doesn't have to fight an entire room full of goons because most people couldn't do that. Now, but anyway, he does it.
Yeah.
It was just kind of annoying to me.
You feel like he could have accomplished the same thing if he had just like hidden in a cake?
Yeah. They're just like special delivery.
Oh, okay.
We're delivering a cake.
Somebody delivers the cake. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
I thought you meant he could just like sit in the cake and then the room full of guys would all die and then he could just. Good thing I sat in that cake. Didn't even break a sweat. No, I get you.
Yeah. So anyway, we kind of broke the seal on that the movie was not that good, I didn't think.
Well, one of my notes is what is the ... theme ... the deeper takeaway ... which is silly. I know it seems silly of me to ask that, but going back to Murder Mystery 1, I felt like there was something at stake in that. And it was something very simple. Their marriage, right? Like they are on the rocks. He is a liar. She doesn't trust him. They have to figure out how they're going to work together as a team, like on a deeper level than just being detectives together. And so by the end of the movie, there's this like arc that we've watched get complicated, develop.
Totally.
And in this one, it just felt like you're not even faking it. You're not even like trying to rehash that story again. It's just like two regular people who need a vacation and they don't get it. And they're slightly better detectives than they used to be, but not really that great. They're like handy when it comes to the very, very end. I don't really care that much about theme or like bigger takeaway or deeper you know, significance for why this is happening. But yeah, I feel like I would have the same criticism if I watched like a Transformers movie or something, where it's like, you didn't even try. And I don't know that I blame you. I just, it makes for a slightly worse movie.
Yeah.
And it's not as if your action sequences are fantastic. You know, it's not as if you have a really like stylish aesthetic, or you are making just one after another really cool allusion to another mystery. It's just kind of like a blah mush, with nothing deeper going on.
I think sequels maybe can be hard because you don't want to like set everybody at square one, but also you need to have the character go through another arc. And somehow they, I feel like, screwed both of those things up. They were set back kind of quite a bit, I felt like. But then they didn't actually develop in any way. So they were back to being irritated at each other, which that can happen.
But I didn't even find their irritation like deeply, it wasn't deeply rooted in like some, unless I am misremembering, like, you know, in the first one, she finds out that he basically lied about all his police
stuff.
Right. Wait, I've been trying to like make a life with you and you can't even tell me this, you know? You've hidden this from me. And so I felt like that was obviously missing from this one, but then they didn't have a deeper conflict to replace it with. But you mentioned sequels, and I think that brought to mind for me one thing that I think, one really successful sequel I think is Terminator 2. And I would say that what they should have done is had T-1000 in this.
Yeah.
Because that shit would have been crazy. Can you imagine if Detective Miller like climes out of the water
if and he all was of a sudden, he turns into silver goo.
Yeah. Or I was actually thinking T-1000 just like kills him.
And
T-1000 comes after them and they're like, wait, we got to figure out who kidnapped the Maharaja, but also
there's a Terminator chasing us
and we don't know why.
Yeah,
and that introduces a lot of mystery. Yeah. A lot of
suspense. That's a mystery. Now, you know, I think you're actually, I think you did make an interesting point there, despite your best efforts.
Damn it.
Which is that there was, like, another thing that sequels do is they add, like, a third element or second element or, you know, like, so if there had been like, oh, we're kind of rehashing this mystery plot, but also someone is on our tail and we don't know why. Like there is a threat that's pressing. I know it's an Adam Sandler movie. I know they're, but like,
God forbid they think about storytelling. They do
something.
Right?
Yeah. They have something that happens in
multi-million dollar blockbuster film. God forbid they take 1 second and say, hey, what are we doing here?
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of other. I agree. Like I'm trying to think of other sequels that feels right to me. But other sequels,
Die Hard 3. Die Hard 2 is just a remake of the first one, basically
with T-1000 in a
different setting. Just with the T-1000, but Die Hard 3, they it's totally different, but also fun in the same way.
Yeah,
I don't know why. You just said sequel. I was like, what's a good sequel? Well, yeah, reference Die Hard in this movie.
I feel like Alien 2 is a good...
Yeah.
Aliens, is that what it's called?
Yeah, yeah.
Is that the one with the mech warrior things?
Yeah, that has a mech warrior. Yeah,
like, okay, there are aliens, there are astronauts out in space, it's terrifying. Also, now we have mechs.
Yeah, well, there's... The first Alien is one alien, and it's like a horror movie, and then in Aliens, it's a... There's like a bunch of aliens and it's an action movie.
Yeah. But no, I just feel like the mech is like that aliens. Third element. That's that.
Also, there's a mech. Yeah, that's the big change. It's the same movie, but there's a mech.
Otherwise, it's just, oh shit, there's even more aliens growling out of my stomach right now. Yeah.
Yeah. So I don't know. Are there other Adam Sandler sequels? There aren't, are there? Am I forgetting about something? Is this the only Adam Sandler like sequel where
that can't possibly be true? What about?
I feel like it's true.
Grown Ups 2.
Oh god damn it! Okay, and that one upped the stakes.
Yeah, actually, yeah, let's dig into that because I bet it did. I think you're right.
I don't remember it.
Remember how?
Apologize. I know I present myself as an expert, but I'm sorry, folks. I'm starting to slip. I don't remember the movies.
Oh, what does he do? He's living
it's
back
suburban.
He's moved back to the town that they vacationed in.
There's a bully. I guess there's bullies in both of them.
Yeah.
Okay. Those are hangout movies and.
And also, you know, he's probably a repeat offender. Sort of different. Like, I don't know that he's going to, like, you know, if he hasn't learned the error of his way. If he didn't do it in this one, why would he have done it earlier in Grown Ups 2? But.
Oh, yeah.
No, I think you're right. There's just, like, as we have said already, there was something fundamental missing from this story. And it was basically, we can't tell the exact same story as last time, but we don't have another story to tell.
We're
going to tell the exact same story from last time, devoid of the things that would be weird to repeat, like them having the exact same conflict.
Yeah, yeah. Hmm. Were there any good set pieces in this movie that you thought? Oh,
their hotel room,
that's the stumper. Yeah,
was cool.
There you go.
And I would have liked to see more of it play out in the enclosed space. That's one of the things I liked about the first one. And it was cool to go to France, but like it was neat to me that if you can find a way to say like, okay, you're all trapped in a room and we're still going to make this interesting, or you're all trapped in a mansion or a yacht or whatever it is. And so when they were in the hotel room and then one after another, the characters kept coming in and they kept pushing them off to the side. Like I thought that was just a good kind of like classic comedic little thing going on there. Reminded me of classic scenes from like the movie Friends, the TV show Friends, because that's like, you know, classic. And it was also just like a cool
with hiding the people in the
hotel room. So basically one person comes in who's like a suspected kidnapper and starts talking to them, and then somebody else comes to the door and knocks, and every time Adam Sandler has like barricaded the door, so he has to keep moving everything out of the way to let the next person in. While he's moving everything out of the way, the other person goes and hides, and by the end of it they have everyone in their room, and it feels like, oh, this is going to be so fun and interesting, what's going to happen? And what ends up happening is Nick and what's her name, Nick and Audrey get drugged or something and they both pass out.
Yeah.
And they wake up and it's like, oh, that's the end of that scene.
Well, yeah, they didn't really quite.
That's how we get out of this really cool scene that we've built up.
They thought of the first half and then they didn't have a punchline for it really.
Yeah.
No, it's interesting. I was going to say that I liked that scene a lot too. And though, like I said, I think it could have had a better punchline, but, it evoked like a farce or something like that. And it's interesting that you referenced, you compared it to Friends. But that makes me think, I feel like sitcoms, really good sitcoms have a lot of farce elements to them. I don't know.
Can you say more about farce for our audience?
Don't you make me do that.
No, you don't have to if you don't want to, but I'm just
for those like
audience
classic,
members who might not know exactly what farce means, because I don't know exactly what farce means. I mean, I think of farce as just like absurdly comedic to the point that you are kind of kicked out of the.
Yeah. I don't know what it means either.
Well, I kind of think of it like a comic dramatic work, but
I think of it like
buffoonery and horseplay.
Buffoonery and
like characterization,
dramatic,
crude characterization, and sort of ludicrously improbable situations.
Oh, yes. All that's in a farce. A good farce has all of that. I was just thinking, yeah, I'm just thinking of, like, maybe these aren't farces. I'm thinking of, like, the Pink Panther movies, not the Steve Martin one. I didn't see it, but the older ones, and just, like, where they really take a look at space, and they're, like, we have kind of limited setting, but we're going to keep adding more and more characters, and it's going to be about the character, like, building a situation, perhaps a situation comedy, where these characters are having to, like, navigate like some kind of conceit. So in this it's like they don't know who the murderer is, so they keep moving them around and hiding them in different places.
I think that's right. I mean, it says ludicrously improbable situation. So I've never used I don't use farce as a term, but now I know what it means. And yeah, I think you're right. Yeah, that is definitely a moment that, like, it's not them, like, having a heart-to-heart. It's not an action-packed moment. It's just a really goofy thing, like a dude who continues to slip on a banana peel and can't seem to get out from under the banana peel.
Right.
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, I was just... Yeah, to me it evoked, like... But just... I think that's some of the best, like, comedy writing is in, like, sitcoms, honestly. Because it's so... So much of that is character based, so in a movie you don't have time to build a character, but I don't know, just the moving pieces, like, now this person's over here, now we're gonna put somebody over here, I don't know.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's funny because it's hard to imagine somebody sitting down watching a sitcom and being just like, well, this would never happen, why aren't they just saying what they mean, you know, but like, that's the fun of it is, put myself in this really boneheaded situation and I, for whatever reason, like, the point of it isn't find a compelling way to stay stuck in the situation. The point of it is stay stuck in the situation. And I feel like good sitcoms or good moments in sitcoms are where it does happen to still be compelling. But the main goal is, like, no, get Ross and Rachel, like, stuck in the closet and they can't figure out how to get out.
Right.
You know, and no, don't have somebody just pull the hinges off and take the door off. That's not right, as fun as them being stuck in the closet for...
Yeah,
over the course of the whole
episode. And then you can build and escalate, and I don't know. There's a pattern to it. So I thought that was a good set piece in the movie, and evoked good comedy writing.
Yeah.
At least gestured toward it.
Dimly.
Anything else?
Well, I was just going to say back, I think one of the other reasons it reminded me of Friends is that Audrey's character just reminded me so much of Rachel.
Oh, why do you think that is?
I don't know. I couldn't put my finger on it, but just very similar kind of characters.
Yeah. And I kept thinking of Billy Madison the whole movie. And then I realized that Jennifer Aniston once in an interview said she really liked the movie Billy Madison, and I was just like, oh, okay, yeah. Because Jennifer Aniston's in this. That's why I keep thinking of Billy Madison. I see the connection. Yeah. Because she says she liked that movie.
That makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
So Adil Akhtar.
Okay.
Who plays the Maharaja.
Okay, yeah.
Recently won a BAFTA for Best Supporting Actor for his role in, not this movie, but in the I think it's a miniseries called Sherwood.
Oh, okay. I thought you were just... The Wikipedia page says Channel 4's Utopia. Oh, wait, no, there's another one here.
Oh, did he win another one before that? He just recently won for Sherwood, Ali, which is a BBC Ava film.
Dude, he wins all kinds of awards.
I was really... It shocked me that, like, wait, he's a... Do we have another example of a really good actor who has done, I should say, an actor who has won a lot of awards and who has also done an Adam Sandler movie?
I mean, I think there's tons. Jack Nicholson?
Yeah. Well, that's, I mean, like
in a small character role?
Well,
Or what are you thinking?
That is, okay, so we'll count that. I'm just, other examples that, I feel like this is a really particular one, but that Jack Nicholson is one.
I don't know if Steve Buscemi's won awards, but he's like a really,
for sure,
respectable actor. Yeah. And then there's also, and I'm spacing his name right now, but he's also in a lot of Coen Brothers movies. John Turturro.
Oh, yeah.
I imagine he's won some awards.
For sure, yeah. Those are the kind I'm thinking of, those people who...
And they just do little bit parts.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they just have weird characters. Like, that's all they are. Where I feel like Jack Nicholson was just playing himself.
Yeah, he's a little bit different because he's, like, a huge movie star and almost... And also he doesn't necessarily, like... I don't know. He's in all kinds of different movies. But yeah, Steve Buscemi and John Turturro, and I guess I don't know enough about the guy that we're talking about right now.
Akhtar, yeah.
I've not seen any of this.
You know what's really surprising is I looked it up. This was co-written by the same guy who wrote Zodiac.
Yeah. I think we talked about that with Murder Mystery 1.
Oh, did he write the first one too?
Yeah, he wrote both of them.
I wonder if he actually wrote anything. I'm just like, what part did you do, man?
For this or for...
For this, specifically. Like, I guess maybe coming up with the actual mystery. Like, oh, we'll fill in the details. We'll fill in everything else. No, just who kidnapped him and how do we find out?
Yeah, he's done... The thing about this guy, James Vanderbilt, is not from Dawson's Creek.
A lot of people think that,
yeah,
that
are not very good.
Well, it's hard to make a movie, you know.
Yeah, but Zodiac is very good. But I don't know how much liberties David Fincher took with the screenplay. But you know, I don't know. You can write a really good screenplay, and then that was kind of your good screenplay for a while.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, you kind of put it all in there, and then you're like, what do I have to say? I don't know. Murder Mystery was fun.
What's next? White House Down.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, White House Down. He wrote The Amazing Spider-Man. Maybe he just didn't was like, oh yeah, I love Spider-Man. I'll tackle Spider-Man. Turns out I didn't have much to say about Spider-Man. That's fair.
Yeah, it was an origin story.
Yeah, a lot of people don't. They probably think they do. A lot of people think they have a lot to say about Spider-Man, but they don't. They don't actually have that much to say about him because, I don't know, it takes a special kind of person to mine new depths for Spider-Man.
Good Lord.
I don't know that anyone's ever done it, actually.
To ever mine depths for Spider-Man. Yeah. Well, it's tough. I mean, he's a 16-year-old kid or something.
Yeah, right.
And for some reason, we continue to want to tell that particular... We...
You know what? Yeah, collectively. You know what, though? Enter the Spider-Verse, I thought, was a fresh take. That was a pretty fresh take on Spider-Man.
Yeah. Is that the... Not the one that just came out, but the first cartoon?
That's a cartoon, yeah. And then they had the sequel. I haven't seen the sequel, but...
I haven't seen the sequel either. I did watch the movie, though, recently on a flight, and I thought, this is fine. And it's fun, and it's got enough of a spin on the origin story. It is still just a damn origin story, but it's got so much...
An origin story of a different character, though, than Peter Parker.
Yeah. But in some way, I feel like it's just...
That's a good point, though. It is an origin story, and it is a Spider-Man movie. Is there another story that you can tell about Spider-Man that is not an origin story?
We gotta watch the second Spider-Verse to find out, I guess. But
I don't know.
I also loved it because it did the, like, everything everywhere all at once thing of just, like, what can we throw at you? And so that was just fun and kept things interesting.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, digression. Spider-Man digression.
Oh, yeah, I forgot.
Because, I mean, I can keep talking about Spider-Man, but I feel like our listeners come for all hitting Adam Sandler commentary.
All I could talk about is the origins of Spider-Man. I can't go any further than that, and I don't know why.
No one ever has. But actually, that speaks to, like, what do you do with the sequel? What do you do with the Spider-Man? Like, what... Okay, you've set it up. You set up Nick and Audrey. You set up Spider-Man. What do you do with them now? Like, they had an origin story. Murder Mystery has an origin story. They kind of figured out how to work together. And now they're going to solve mysteries. And so what do you do with that setup? Nothing. They had nothing to do with it.
Yeah.
The most interesting part was getting there, but next step, I don't know. Like, you can come up with interesting mysteries, I guess, but...
Is this, like, the myth or the, like, the lie of the sequel, which is that there is no... Like, once you've told the story, every sequel is just trying to convince us that there's more of a story
that
we should keep watching?
Sort of, yeah. No, I mean, and we talked about three well-regarded sequels, all in the action canon, for whatever reason, but I guess that's usually what gets sequels. They're like, Sleepless in Seattle doesn't have a sequel
yet.
You've Got Mail doesn't have a sequel. It is a remake. What was I saying? Oh yeah, three action sequels, and each one did figure out a different thing that made it compelling again.
Oh, The Godfather. Next. That's an example.
Yeah, yeah.
Great. I mean, just
does that? How many mechs were in that in Godfather 2?
There's only, they add one mech to 2, but then in 3 there's 1,000.
But is 3 good?
No, because most of it is just this guy trying to figure out how to sell all these mechs. And it's like so long still and very dramatic and moody, but like he's just sitting in a stockyard basically being like calling people.
I never saw buy a mech.
Yeah.
Come on.
All these fucking mechs. I gotta sell the mechs.
That's not a specific impression of anybody.
Oh, okay.
That was just, except for the character in The Godfather 3 who's selling the mechs.
I'm gonna make you a mech you can't refuse.
That's it.
That's pretty good.
But yeah, they all did something. They all figured out a way to. But in my own argument, I actually, this is a digression, a super digression.
Spider-Man?
A topic that's near and dear to my heart lately. But I actually, I think Alien is better than Aliens, and I think Terminator 1 is better than Terminator 2, and I think it's for some of the same reasons we're talking about, which is, they already told their story, and you can add more and you can add wilder shit to it, but the first time around it just has like a freshness that is hard to recapture. But Die Hard 3 I think is on equal footing to the first one.
Okay.
But it started out as a different movie, not a Die Hard movie.
Yeah.
And then they attached Die Hard to it. And so sometimes you can work your way in if you're, so it was an original concept that then they're like, let's throw Bruce Willis in there. And
yeah, they were like, he can either get trapped in a skyscraper or he can get bit by a radioactive spider.
Right.
But we need this to be,
two concepts.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that with Terminator 2 for me, I think that's a really good example of a sequel that convinced you well enough that there was more to be told about the story. And I think it's a really unique example because it's a story about time travel, and so there is more to be told.
Yeah.
We want to know about this baby that is apparently going to be so powerful that machines from the future are coming back to try to kill his mom before she has the baby. And I think the thought that, like, now we're going to tell you the story of this kid and how he survives.
Yeah.
I think that's a really compelling follow-up to that, I wouldn't say better or worse, I just think that's a good example of a sequel that found the story that was worth telling in the sequel.
It did tell a story. I think you're absolutely right. They looked at the first one and they're like, what more is there to be told, or could there be to be told, that isn't just the exact same thing again? And they did incorporate that. My argument though would be that we actually already made that story in our heads just based on the premise of the first one, and we were like, oh, there's going to be a baby who's going to start the Rebel Alliance of the Terminator movies, and we already figured that all out in our head, and we didn't actually need that, and it might have been better in our heads. That's my argument, but I'm always making that argument. I'm always talking to guys on the bus about that.
Have you seen Terminator? I need to drive. I'm sorry, sir. I would love to talk about this again with you, but I need to drive today.
See, we made the story in our head. We didn't need to see the rest of it.
I just, you're wrong.
But it is a good movie. Terminator 2 is a good movie. And it is a story that is not the exact same. So, like, they did find something to do with it.
Not, can't say the same for Murder Mystery 2, and I feel like we can leave it at that. Are we still
on about that?
I think we can leave it at that.
We probably can leave it at that, yeah.
Would you recommend this particular film, Chris?
I'm afraid not. I just didn't think it had any much in it. I mean, I like, I like Jennifer Aniston. I think she's a good comedic actress. I have not watched Friends, which is probably her great work, her great body she's of work as a comedian, as a comedic actress.
Yeah, yeah.
But I've always felt like of the movies that she's been in, none of them seemed like they were stellar, which has always been a little bit like, she could probably, like, that's too bad. It's a little bit like, yeah. Oh my God. I think the same thing of the person who's in Scary Movie. The woman whose name is Sean Wayans. No, it's Anna Faris.
Oh, yeah.
I think Anna Faris is a great comedic actress who probably isn't actually in a good movie. But Jenna Anderson's in some Adam Sandler movies, so.
Yeah, yeah.
She's done some okay stuff.
I was thinking of The Good Girl, which is like the most serious role Jennifer Aniston.
Oh, I don't know that Jennifer one. Aniston.
And it's a really, it's like a bleak kind of domestic film that has Jake Gyllenhaal in it and John C. Reilly as well.
Is it a comedy?
It's like a bleak, dark comedy that isn't very funny, but does have.
You just described a drama.
Yeah, it's a drama with like some moments that are just really quirky and funny. It actually, in some ways, reminds me of. There's a little bit of like Punch Drunk Love light, just a little bit.
So Jennifer Aniston has her own Punch Drunk Love. That's interesting. So
now that gives me an idea.
She just needs her own Billy Madison.
She just needs her own.
Where she talks in gibberish for half the movie.
I think every actor acts like a should child. Have to do that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that'd be really cool.
Yeah.
Now, Jennifer Aniston might be somebody fun to do a podcast on. Just putting it out there. Something to think about.
Just the movies, or are we watching all of Friends?
And
his friend, but that would be one episode. We'll just watch all 8 seasons of Friends, or however many it is, and then do 1 hour about it.
That sounds great.
It'll take us a while to get that one out.
I feel like she might have like 3 or 4 movies that were like, well, I think it might actually be a lot like the Adam Sandler podcast, but
yeah,
with less gibberish and less really zany departures from like anything resembling a coherent career.
Yeah.
So I think that's the part of the special charm of Adam Sandler. But yeah, so you wouldn't recommend it. I wouldn't either. I think we can leave it at that. Beyond that, I just want to point out that our next podcast is going to be for You Are So Not Invited to My Bat Mitzvah.
Is that right?
Yeah.
That's next?
Our next episode. Yep.
That's next.
You Are
What
So
about
Not
Airheads? I've been asked to ask that.
Oh,
by
really?
Our fans.
By our fan?
Yeah.
We could do that one.
When
but
is when is Bat Mitzvah?
Bat Mitzvah releases August 25th.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, with our workload, we need to fit a few more in.
Yeah, this is
so
one that
we'll
could
do.
We could do like immediately afterward. We could like, well, I guess this is true about every single movie we've ever watched, because it's not in theaters; it's in Netflix. It's
yeah.
on Netflix, but
oh,
it's never mind. That's a
we
dumb
could
idea.
Yeah we could do it immediately after it comes out.
So,
because I'll be free. I know you don't have anything going on.
Nothing at all. Now, oh, great. It's produced by Tim Herlihy.
That's not going to be funny to all the people who don't know you personally.
Oh, I thought you meant my mention of Tim Herlihy. Yeah, I guess we can announce that there's a new addition to the the fourth Adam Sandler podcast family. There will be, I assume. I'm having my wife is having a baby in August. So.
And it's your baby too.
It is my baby too. Yep. It is our baby, and you may hear it every now and then. Goo goo gaga-ing in the background, speaking its own little gibberish as I record while babysitting my baby. I don't think it's babysitting. You don't babysit your own child. You just watch your own child.
I guess so.
As far as if I can get paid for this, that would be killer, but I don't think that's how it works. But yeah, so we can talk more off air about this, but next up for us is either going to be Airheads or You Are So Not Invited to My Bat Mitzvah. And as always, we can't wait to see you there. And if you want to reach out to us, our email is the number 4aspodcast@gmail.com. Any concerns, complaints, questions, commendations, or maybe a stray Adam Sandler sighting. Or if you just want to send us a picture and be like, do you think this looks like Adam Sandler? We can tell you whether we think it does, and we'll describe the picture on air.
Mashed potatoes.
How cool would that be? Yeah. And you can even say in there, I don't want you to say my name, and we won't even say your name. We will do whatever you want. Just email us.
I'm so sorry.
Okay. Any final words, Chris?
I don't have anything. Just stay tuned. We'll put another episode out.
Until then, real soon.
Yeah.
Hibbity dibbity. That's never going to catch on, is it?
But what about the Colonel? What's his motive?
Well, maybe he just is sick of working for rich people because you guys suck.